AIDS brings a response from the government.
AIDS, the disease which claims life.
Welcome to AIDS The Lost Voices with me, William Hampson, alongside the heartfelt diary of America's own, Dave Partridge. Dave was diagnosed with AIDS in 1987. His diary, a regular fixture in Illinois' Herald and Review newspaper, sharing his journey of fear, hope and resilience, giving a voice to those often overlooked. Digits ready? Let's go. This was his personal legacy, a searing reminder of the horrors of AIDS, stated the Herald and Review newspaper of Illinois in the United States. Yet, what good is a legacy if it remains unseen in the newspaper archives? To ensure that Dave Partridge's voice resonates beyond the confines of dusty newspaper pages, his poignant diary, penned under the alias Jacob, inspired by the character from Le Cage aux Folles, serves as a powerful testament to his experiences. In the previous episode, Dave undertook blood transfusions to boost his immune system, and he initiated a vegetable garden which served not only as a source of fresh produce but also a therapeutic retreat from the challenges he faced. Engaging with the readers of his journal, he responded to fan mail and developed a special bond with one individual he affectionately referred to as Grandma. Amidst his efforts, he penned a letter to President Ronald Reagan, though a response had not yet materialized. Dave's journey also included a painful chapter involving a toothache, during which he encountered difficulties finding a dentist willing to treat AIDS patients without the option of welfare payment, resulting in a hefty bill after multiple extractions to clear an ongoing AIDS-related infection in his mouth. And adding to the complexity of this situation was a brush with Kaposi's sarcoma, coupled with a brief whirlwind romance that ultimately didn't blossom as he hoped. Chapter 21, published on Christmas Day, 1988. I've got a great Christmas present. New friends. I haven't had a banner year when it comes to friends. I broke up with my living lover, Edward. I tried to have a relationship with a woman, but discovered that is taxing while you're sick. Three of my friends, not all from Central Illinois, have died of AIDS. But recently, I've made new friends, and the strange thing is, we've known each other for years but have been out of touch. Now, our illnesses have brought us together. Close friend and journalist at the Herald and Review, who are publishing Jacob's journal, gives us a little bit of insight into this chapter, where she states, "For the first time, Jacob has begun to socialise with others who have AIDS or related illnesses. Today, he introduces two men, Carl and Tom. They are a homosexual couple diagnosed with an early stage of AIDS. Technically, their ailment is called ARC, AIDS-related complex. Another new friend is their roommate, Andrew. He has not been exposed to the AIDS virus, according to tests, but he worries that he, too, may one day be diagnosed. Like Jacob, the men use pen names to protect their families and friends." In his journal, Jacob goes on to write, "I met Carl in the hospital waiting room. We were both there for breathing treatments to protect our lungs from pneumonia. Although Carl looked vaguely familiar, I wasn't sure who he was until the therapist called our names. For 2 weeks now, we've been taking our treatments together. It makes a world of difference having him there. We have common ground. There's substance for conversation. I knew Jacob, but I didn't think the hospital waiting room was the appropriate place for a reunion," says Carl, 28 of Decatur. Carl learned in July that his AIDS test was positive. "I'm considered to have an earlier or milder stage of the disease, but it's very possible I'll be bumped up to full-blown AIDS rapidly," Carl says. "I've always had the attitude, it's not going to happen to me," he added. Carl has battled common symptoms of AIDS: thrush, a yeast infection of the throat, shingles, night sweats, and a queasy stomach. Now he's fighting tuberculosis. "I was reading Jacob's journal before I ran into Jacob at the hospital," Carl says. In his journal, Jacob talked about contemplating suicide. "That's very real, especially when you're first diagnosed," Carl says. "When you're having those thoughts and you haven't talked to anybody else, you worry about your sanity," he added. In his journal, Jacob goes on to write, "I feel like the old lady. Carl, Tom and Andrew are going through the things I went through after I was diagnosed with AIDS. Maybe I can help them understand what's going on. I didn't have the luxury of having anyone to talk to. Decatur is not as small as some people want to think. I wanted to introduce my new friends to let people know I'm not the only AIDS patient out there." Amy Ragsdale goes on to share, "Jacob's new friend Tom, 23, is a former intravenous drug user. Andrew, 23, works in the healthcare field. He's now waiting results of a test showing if he's been exposed to the AIDS virus. If I'm exposed, I'm exposed, Andrew says. It's scary, but I can't sit there and say, I wish I would have done this or I wish I wouldn't have done that. I too lived by the philosophy, it'll never happen to me. Returning to Jacob's journal entry, he goes on to write, sometimes I call myself AIDS Voyager 1. Being with these guys who are all so sick is a big emotional relief for me. It's a lot easier to be around someone who understands what you're feeling, understands your mood swings. Of course, we don't just sit around and talk about being sick. That's depressing. You don't need to go out to get depressed because there's plenty of that at home. When we get together, we cook, we watch television, we play the card game Uno. Sometimes we just relax. The other night we all did the laundry. I'm trying to teach these guys how a laundromat can be fun. You make goofy faces at the little kids and stuff. Then we had dinner at 2 a.m. We were busy and it just got late. I made fried chicken, mashed potatoes, green beans. Of course we had cookies for dessert. I've never seen such a small group of people eat so many cookies. I'm spending today, Christmas, at my parents' house in Decatur. We'll exchange gifts and have dinner. I haven't seen my parents in 2 or 3 months. We haven't been fighting, but we haven't been communicating. I'm looking forward to being at their house and not in the hospital, like I was last year. Even though the nurses were very nice to me, I'd rather be at home. I've mailed nearly 60 Christmas cards, all to people who have written to me in response to my journal. I went through all the mail I've received since I was diagnosed. Unfortunately, not all of the letters had return addresses. I'm horrible at letter writing and haven't responded to everyone who has written to me throughout the year. Some people will be surprised to get a Christmas card from me. I took a great big box of the cookies I made and dropped them off at the nurse's station near the room where I stayed at Decatur Memorial Hospital last year. I also took cookies to my doctors and to my pharmacist. In the last couple of weeks, I've probably gotten more than a dozen birthday cards and Christmas cards from readers. I received a cute ornament for my Christmas tree from one reader and a poinsettia from another. I got a flannel shirt, my favourite kind, from a telephone operator at the Herald and Review. Another friend gave me a gift certificate for the pet store so I can restock my fish tank. Everyone, thank you for treating me so well. I hope you have a holiday filled with love and good things. Chapter 22, published on the 6th of February, 1989. I took the vacation I'd been dreaming about. In early January, I got a letter from Pete, a man I was romantically involved with 9 years ago when I lived in New York City. Pete asked me to get in touch with him. I called, and a few days later, he sent me bus tickets to New York City so I could visit him. Pete suspects he has AIDS. When he first talked, he had no idea that I have AIDS. I told him, of course. Pete is now 38 years old. He's very attractive and honest to a fault. He lives in the same neighbourhood where I used to live, the East Village. It's famous for Hell's Angels and punk rockers. It's an ethnic melting pot where there are probably a half dozen restaurants on every block. The bus trip to New York took a little more than 24 hours each way. The weather was perfect, in the lower 50s. Pete lives on the 6th floor in a walk-up apartment building. On the way up, I had to stop once or twice for a rest. I didn't do a whole lot of sightseeing during my week in New York. I was there to see Pete, not the city. Since I had no money, Pete kept rein on my habits. He allowed me a couple of beers a day, and the less I smoked, the better he liked it. I came back from New York with a different outlook on life. Before, I was really depressed. Pete, who's always been a kind of a health nut, put me back in line. I want to start drinking carrot and cabbage juice. Pete told me he's seeing a nutritionist who says certain vegetable juices can bolster the immune system. Pete drinks 8-ounce glasses of both carrot and cabbage juice twice a day. He says the taste is sweet. Eating cabbage can give you gas, but Pete says cabbage juice doesn't. Instead, it gives him energy. I'm going to try to find a second-hand juice extractor to get the most benefits from the juice. You're supposed to drink it within 20 minutes of extracting it. My toothbrush might make me sick. Pete warned me about this. He said a toothbrush is usually moist and warm, which makes it an excellent environment for bacteria and germs to grow. Now I keep my toothbrush in a Parmesan cheese jar, washed of course. The jar is half full of hydrogen peroxide that's supposed to kill all the germs that might be hiding in the brush. A reader once sent me information about taking hydrogen peroxide like medicine. I tried it, but it made me sick. I rinsed the hydrogen peroxide off my toothbrush before using it. Still, it gives me the breath of death. I only have 6 teeth left since most of them have been pulled to help clear up the infection in my mouth, but I have to brush my gums. I don't have any dentures yet. I can't eat and I can't afford to lose much more weight. But apparently, I'm going to stay toothless until I find a dentist who takes public aid AIDS patients. So far, my dental work has cost me about $1,200. I still owe about $700 of that amount. It's going to cost me another $1,700 to have the job finished. I can understand why my dentist wants the money up front. If I curl up and die, he won't get paid. I think I might have to go to St. Louis or Chicago, where there are dental schools that provide treatment at reduced costs. Also, in a big city, they should be more likely to accept AIDS patients. If I had known how tough it is for a public aid patient, especially one who has AIDS, to get dental work done in Decatur, I would have kept my mouth shut about my illness. Unless the dentist asked, I wouldn't have volunteered any information. A few days ago, I was at a grocery store service desk, cashing a cheque. The clerk started talking to the man behind me. She said, "Pneumonia?" And he said, "Yes, they both have it." I turned around and looked. There were two little kids, 3 or 4 years old, and they both looked sick. I was angry and scared. Angry because they were out running around where they could give their illness to someone else, especially someone with an impaired immune system. Scared because they might give it to me. I immediately turned away from them and put my hand over my mouth. I didn't want to share the air they were breathing. If you ever need to buy a gift for someone with AIDS, get them suspenders. A friend gave me a pair for Christmas. I've lost about £30 since I was first diagnosed in August 1987. Although I've gotten some smaller hand-me-down pants, my rear end is now too little to hold them up. I was having to tighten my belt so tight, it caused me gastric distress. I'm trying to find a home for a compressor that was used by a Southern Illinois AIDS patient. After the AIDS patient died 2 months ago, his parents gave the machine to my friend, Mary Francis, and she asked me to see if I could find someone who could use it. The compressor is exactly like the one I use when I take breathing treatments to ward off pneumonia. I called Decatur Memorial and St. Mary's Hospitals. People at both hospitals said they don't use donated machines, but will pass them on to a charity like the American Lung Association. But the hospital people said the charities usually destroy the used machines rather than give them to somebody else. Rather than gamble on giving the equipment to a local agency that might destroy it, I'm sending the compressor to Pete. He said he knows a few AIDS patients who will be able to use it. I'm making another attempt to stop smoking. About a week ago, I started using a medicine patch that calms my desire for a cigarette. The first patch, on the right side of my chest, made me break out in a rash. I put a fresh one on the left side of my chest and it isn't giving me any problems. I've gone from a pack a day to maybe a half pack. It's a 6-week program. Nothing is going to stop overnight. Whether I continue all of this habit-changing behaviour will depend on my next doctor's visit. If I get good news, I'll be motivated to live a healthy life. If I get bad news, I might figure nothing I do will change things. Chapter 23, published on the 14th of March, 1989. I have Kaposi's sarcoma. You've probably seen pictures of AIDS victims covered with purple spots. That's the telltale sign of Kaposi's. I got the biopsy results last week. Kaposi's sarcoma is a type of cancer that often strikes AIDS patients. In the past, I've written about having purple spots on my legs. That was a rash, a skin condition that comes and goes. But the spots I have now are different. They all started with flat spots that turned into bumps. I told my doctor, James Wade III, that I wanted a biopsy. I was never brave enough to ask for a biopsy before. I think Dr. Wade was afraid I'd go off the deep end if I found out I had cancer. He probably thought I'd start drinking too much, stop eating, all the things I've done in the past when I was singing the blues. I promised Dr. Wade I wouldn't do anything silly. I told him I figured I had Kaposi's, but I wanted to be sure. I told him I just wanted to get on medication and go on with my life. I've already started taking interferon, a drug that is supposed to slow down the progress of Kaposi's, just like the drug AZT slows down the progress of AIDS. When Dr. Wade gave me the diagnosis, he asked me how soon I wanted to start taking treatments. I said, today, the sooner the better. I got my first interferon shot Tuesday, the same day I was diagnosed. Lab work showed my blood counts are about a fourth of what they should be. Interferon could make my blood counts drop further, but Dr. Wade and I agreed that I should start taking treatments anyway. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. I'll have frequent blood tests to keep track of my condition. I was scared the shot would be painful, but I didn't even feel it. It was like the shots of a diabetic, given in the fatty tissue of the upper thigh, or in the spare tyre around the stomach. I don't have a spare tyre, so I got it in the thigh. After I was diagnosed, I went back every day to get another shot. Each time, the nurse explained what she was doing. She gave me a pamphlet describing how the shots are given. By the end of the week, I was trained to give myself the shots at home. It's not like I didn't know how to use a needle. I used to be an intravenous drug user. Now I get a supply of interferon in syringes that I have to keep in my refrigerator. After each day's shot, I break the needle off so it can't be reused. I collect the used needles and syringes in a can. When it's full, I'll throw them all away. Kaposi's will be a visible marker. That's the part of it I really hate. Since I've had AIDS, I've been more conscious of my appearance. Sometimes my skin has looked really ashen. Sometimes my medication made my skin turn dark, like a suntan. Still, nobody could tell I had AIDS just by looking at me. But if the purple splotches associated with Kaposi's appear on my face or arms, it will be obvious I have AIDS. The doctors only remove the lesions if the patient asks. Removing them doesn't cure the disease. And even if the lesions are removed, all you can do is wait to see where they pop up next. Right now, the biggest spot I have is about half the size of a dime, and the smallest spot is the size of a pencil point. They're kind of grey, blue, black, and they look like miniature bruises. Once in a while, they itch. I had two of my lesions removed from my right leg for the biopsy and had to have stitches. I probably have 8 or 10 more lesions. All but one are on my legs. The other one is on the back of my head. It looks like a mole, but you can't see too much of it because of my hair. What I have is an early stage of Kaposi's, but I think after a certain point, Kaposi's could be really painful, and I think it could be fatal, just like any other cancer. I haven't had any side effects from the interferon yet, but I'm expecting them. Since I can pretty much count on losing my hair, I'm planning to shop for a wig when rummage sales start up in the spring. I'll just take a regular woman's wig and cut it down to a man's style. I have chocolate, vanilla, mint chocolate chip, coffee, and peaches and honey ice cream in my freezer. I figure my body will need extra calories to fight the Kaposi's, so every night I have a big bowl of ice cream. I had been holding at about 146 pounds, although I had lost 3 pounds when I went to see the doctor this last week. While I've been worrying about having Kaposi's, I've had a 3-week bout with the flu. The symptoms felt just like a Buffarin commercial.
When the pain starts here, the pain stops here. When the
pain below the eyes, pain between the eyes, stopped up nose.
The pain stops here with new extra strength Buffarin in tablets and capsules.
Chapter 24, published on the 1st of May, 1989. I've been home from the hospital about a week. My latest problem began a couple of months ago with a bad sinus cold that went on and on. I just never got better. My doctor, James Wade III, sent me to a specialist who took x-rays and did CAT scans. The findings? My sinuses were filled with infection. I was admitted to Decatur Memorial Hospital on April 7th. At that time, my head felt like a balloon, ready to explode. In my hospital room, electric blue outlines of daffodils covered the wallpaper. I bet there were 60 to 75 daffodils per square foot. The curtains were plain blue. I liked them because they kept out the light. With my pounding head and sinuses, light hurt. Sometimes I'd catch myself staring at the daffodils and picking out different shapes. It was kind of like staring at clouds and thinking you see animals. I tried to count the daffodils, but they wouldn't stop moving. My headache combined with pain-killing drugs made everything swim. After focusing on a 3x3 foot section of wallpaper above the door, I told a nurse, "You know, I counted 3,642 daffodils on that piece of wallpaper." She believed me. On April the 10th, I had surgery. The doctors went in through my nose to examine my sinus cavity and cleaned out some of the congestion. The doctors discovered my sinuses were blocked by growths or polyps. To allow my sinuses to drain, all these growths had to be removed. So, a week later, I had more surgery. I did a lot of thinking and meditating in the hospital. Sometimes the nurse would catch me sitting cross-legged on the bed, my spine totally erect, almost in a trance. I was trying to tune out the world. Since I was diagnosed with cancer a couple of weeks ago, I've been going through a depression, wanting to isolate myself from the world. I think those are emotions all AIDS patients feel. Other times in the hospital, I watch television. My favourite shows were the afternoon soap operas, the tabloid TV show A Current Affair, and MASH. On weekends, I generally left the TV off. Weekend television is the pits. I'm not wild about westerns. TV could be great company. When I had enough, I just turned it off and took a nap. I don't like a whole lot of visitors when I'm in the hospital. If I'm not in the mood for company, I'm liable to tell visitors to leave. The surgeries themselves weren't bad. I was put to sleep. Afterward, I got shots of Demerol every few hours to kill the pain. The worst part was having the gauze and cotton packaging removed from my nose. The packaging felt like concrete blocks. It was left in place for 24 hours after the surgery. To remove the packaging, the doctor took hold of the string connected to it and, firmly but gently, pulled. Ouch! Finally, my doctors decided yeast was partially to blame for my sinus infection. Now I'm taking antibiotic pills to get rid of it. When menus came, I tried to order meals like I would fix for myself at home. With my sinuses clogged, the food had to have a very strong flavour and aroma before I could taste or smell it. My best meal, breaded pork tenderloin with buttered peas and baked potato with sour cream. Eating is tougher because I don't have many teeth. Most of my teeth were pulled several months ago because of infection, and I still don't have my dentures. Another day, I ordered liver and onions, and a corned beef on rye. I figured I'd eat the liver and onions right away and save the sandwich for later. But the liver and onions had been overcooked, and the liver was too tough. Without teeth, I couldn't handle it. The corned beef was tough too. Strike two. While I was in the hospital, my doctors had me quit taking AZT, the drug that slows the progress of AIDS. I've taken AZT since December 1987. They also stopped the treatment I was getting for Kaposi sarcoma, the cancer I'm fighting, that's common among AIDS patients. Also halted were the breathing treatments that are supposed to keep me from getting pneumonia, another hazard for AIDS victims. Taking all that medicine saps your energy. The doctors figured I needed all the energy I could muster to fight the infection. One bad thing about a long hospital stay, women with hard-soled shoes. Oh, I would lie in my bed and listen. After a while, the hallways began to sound like a stable of Clydesdales. When I went into the hospital, the doctors told me I weighed 149 pounds and 5 feet 10 inches. 1 week later, I walked down the hall and weighed myself. The scale said 129. I panicked. I thought 20 pounds was too much weight for a person to lose in 1 week. Later that day, I asked a nurse to check my weight. She said I weighed 129. The next day, I went back to the scale. This time, I weighed myself as 132 pounds. Oh, I give up. I'm not sure how much I weigh, but I've obviously lost more than a few pounds during this ordeal. My legs have gotten weak because of a lack of exercise. I noticed it the first week in the hospital. I bent down to pick up something off the floor. Getting up was more of a chore than I expected. When I felt well enough, I tried to exercise by walking in the hallway and doing knee bends before going to bed. I don't think I'll ever be Jack Lalanne. Last year, I had pneumonia and tuberculosis. Already this year, I've been diagnosed with Kaposi sarcoma, the sinus infection, and the sinus polyps. What's next? Two illnesses. That's my yearly quota. I don't want anything else to happen. Chapter 25, published on the 8th of August, 1989. Hello, I'm back. Since my last journal entry, I've spent several weeks in the hospital. I had another operation on my sinuses. At the same time, I had a skin infection called cellulitis on my foot. Then, I got pneumonia. Nothing exotic, just a very common type called pneumococcal. It began with a pain in my chest and a 122-degree temperature. I put off calling the doctor because I knew I'd land back in the hospital. I'm treated well in the hospital. It's nice to have someone else do the cooking and dishes, but I still don't like to go. My saving grace was that I had a common pneumonia and my doctor started treatment quickly. With lots of medicine, I was better within a week. My doctor, James Wade III, said he was surprised how fast I bounced back, or that I bounced back at all. The uniqueness of Jacob's journal being published in the Herald and Review newspaper is that journalist and good friend to Jacob, Amy Ragsdale, offers a running commentary throughout all the chapters. In this particular chapter, Amy speaks to Jacob's doctor, who states, "Jacob was real sick," Wade said. "He had bacteria in his bloodstream when he came into the hospital. It was affecting both of his lungs." Wade took a sample of Jacob's blood to grow the bacteria and pinpoint the strain of pneumonia. "We didn't wait for an answer," Wade said. "We treated him for several possible types of pneumonia at once. This type responds to antibiotics better than many other types of infections AIDS patients get," he added. "Pneumonia is an overgrowth of bacteria in the air spaces of the lungs," Wade explained. "It occurs more in patients who are debilitated, whose resistance is low, who are undernourished, and who have underlying lung problems. With doses of two antibiotics, Jacob began to rebound. Many normal patients will bounce back quickly after 1 or 2 days of treatment," Wade said. "I'm just pleasantly surprised that Jacob recovered quickly as well. I think he was fortunate," Wade added. "How is Jacob doing after nearly 2 years battling AIDS?" Quote, "His weight is slipping," Wade said. "Before he was diagnosed with AIDS, 5'10" Jacob weighed nearly 180 pounds. He's down to 119. Comparing to 3 or 6 months ago, he's gradually declined. But, hopefully, he will hold his own for a while," Wade stated. Returning to Jacob's journal entry, he goes on to write, "Right now, I'm feeling great. I've done all kinds of things that I thought I'd never be able to do again, like walking to and from the grocery store. The skin irritation on my foot seems to be cleared up. Now I'm taking medication because I have sores on my tongue and in the corners of my mouth. I think it's a form of herpes. The sinus problems that began early this year are still with me. I had 2 rounds of surgery in April to remove the growths and polyps from my sinus cavity so my head could drain. A few weeks ago, I had a third exploratory operation. My left nostril is fine, but now the right one doesn't work. While I was in the hospital for the sinus surgery and skin condition, I had a seizure. It was because of the large amount of medicine I was taking. It was like a dream. I was awake, but my mind was out to lunch. I remember screaming in my dream. Come to find out, I had really been screaming. I had to be restrained until I came back to my senses. My medicine schedule has undergone a lot of changes in the last few months. The first change, I quit taking my breathing treatments. I was taking weekly breathing treatments to prevent pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Although I've never had this type of pneumonia, it is very common among AIDS patients. I took the breathing treatments for, I can't remember exactly, 3 or 4 months, I think. They just wore me out. I couldn't exercise, couldn't go for walks, I could hardly get up and down the stairs to my apartment. I'm cranky by nature. Being tired made me more cranky. I couldn't understand how it was healthy for me to be constantly worn out. I decided there was no reason to put myself through it. I opted for quality of life, not quantity. The second change, I'm not taking interferon, a drug that helped my body fight Kaposi sarcoma, the cancer that causes purple splotches. Dr. Wade took me off interferon when I was in the hospital. He plans to put me back on eventually, but for now I think I'm doing fine without it. Like the breathing treatments, the daily shots made me tired. I've gotten some new Kaposi lesions, but so far they're only on my legs, not my face or torso. But I know if I have the lesions on the outside, I might also have them on the inside. I didn't tell many people that I was in the hospital. When I'm feeling bad, I don't want to see anybody and I don't want anybody to see me. Even before I got sick, I had considered not writing any more journal entries. Sometimes doing a journal is depressing. I don't like dwelling on gloom and doom. Some readers, including a couple of the cleaning ladies at the hospital, convinced me to keep writing. I get the rest of my teeth pulled out on August 24th. A Decatur dentist is going to do it. The dentist takes public aid patients like myself and he knows I have AIDS. After a month to heal, I'll have the impressions made and I'll get dentures. When I get those dentures, I'm going to have the world's greatest fat attack. Pizza, macadamia nuts, oh, a good steak, corn on the cob. It will be such a delight not to have to cut corn off the cob. With only 2 teeth to chew, I can hardly eat corn at all now. I wish I could go to the campground where my folks have a place, but they think their friends have read this journal and figured out that I'm Jacob. My parents are afraid they'll be kicked out of the campground because of me. I'm not sure that's the case. At first, people who knew I had AIDS seemed really uneasy around me. Now, people seem more relaxed. I think all this AIDS education, with the journal, may be working. People need to remember that I'm more likely to get sick from them than vice versa because my resistance is so low. Anyway, I'd love to go for a boat ride this summer. I haven't been once, and I'm not certain I'll see another summer. Journalist and friend Amy Ragsdale is over at Jacob's apartment and she gives this insight. Record albums, fans and clothes litter the floor. Jacob's television set, his constant companion, stays on around the clock. Free fans keep the air moving. This place always reflects how I feel, Jacob says, tiptoeing over the clutter resulting from a futile attempt to rearrange his one-room apartment. I've started cleaning. Believe it or not, it was worse, Jacob added. Although the outside temperature is nearly 90 degrees, the apartment is relatively cool, upper 70s or lower 80s. It's about this temperature year-round, he says. I try not to do too much cooking in the summer. That helps keep it cool, he added. Two fish aquariums bubble on opposite sides of the room. Their newest residents, $17 worth of black hatchet tetras, red platies, black neon tetras, and moonglow tetras. I was going to get rid of one aquarium, but then I cleaned it out. I figured since I'd spent the time, I'd keep it, Jacob added. During this visit, Jacob goes on to write in his journal. Readers have been keeping me company. A family in Taylorville sent me a box of homemade chocolate chip cookies and two books. One of the books, How Will I Tell My Mother, by Jerry Arterburn, is about a man who kept his homosexuality a secret until he got acquired immune deficiency syndrome. A Decatur minister wrote, I have read with great interest your journal in the Herald and Review. It takes great courage to share your life the way you do. Your writings lately have given me the feeling you are battling even more difficulties now. It is my prayer that God would give you relief and strength. The minister included his phone number in the letter. I called him and he came over. Later, he visited me in the hospital. I believe in God, so I guess I'm a Christian, but I'm not a member of any church. The minister had been teaching me about the Bible. He's been a great coach. He's helped me feel more secure, more accepting of my sickness. He's made me believe that I can die peacefully. I may not make it to heaven, but I won't go to hell. Chapter 26, published on the 4th of September, 1989. I've lived with AIDS for 2 years, having been diagnosed on August the 3rd, 1987. A lot of patients are 6 feet underground by the time their second year anniversary comes. Maybe I'm living on borrowed time. I know I have been very fortunate. I haven't had some of the normal complications, spinal meningitis, for example. Physically, I've had a lot of low points, like when I had to get repeated blood transfusions to bolster the oxygen-carrying part of my blood, or when I got amphotericin B for a rare form of pneumonia. The drug gave me teeth-chattering chills. Both times I felt so bad I figured, this is it, I'm going to die. How would I have felt at the time I was diagnosed if I had known everything I would go through? Scared? Actually, I think I would have felt reassured. In the beginning, I was sick so often, my life was filled with gloom and doom. I figured I would die in a few months. I felt a lot worse a year ago than I do now. After 2 years of drugs, therapy, and getting poked and prodded, I'm still able to smile. I think that says a lot. My teeth are gone. Last week, the dentist pulled all 6 of the teeth I had left, 5 uppers and 1 lower. My teeth had been getting worse every day. My gums were receding and cavities had started at the gum line. One tooth was real sensitive. It hurt all the time. It took about 20 minutes. The dentist said the teeth came out really easy. Given the condition they were in, I can understand. I've got a couple of sore spots now, but nothing like I anticipated. I'm sure getting rid of my teeth and clearing up the infection in my mouth will help my health. Getting my dentures depends on how rapidly my mouth heals. Maybe a month. I stockpiled meals to eat with no teeth. Last week, before my dental appointment, I made chicken and noodles, chicken with rice, and other soft foods. I made one of the best meatloaves I've ever made. I am also eating lots of ice cream, chicken soup, and ham and bean soup. I'm not having as hard time as I expected. The Kaposi's sarcoma has started to show on my arms, especially the left one. There's a spot, kind of like a bruise, near my wrist. The spots start as small lumps, then a small red dot appears. The dot gets bigger and turns purple. The Kaposi's spots on my left side are worse than my right. There are about twice as many. I've lost count of how many of these cancerous blotches are on my legs. The spots don't hurt or itch though. I recently had a routine checkup, blood work, chest x-rays, vital signs. While I was waiting to see the doctor, the nurse remarked about how well I looked. She said my colour was good and my eyes had a twinkle. When you feel a little puny, it helps to hear things like that. All I know is how I feel. I'm tired most of the time. Lately, I've felt good enough that I think I can do about anything. Then, halfway through a task, I discover I have no more go left. Last week, I decided to walk about 6 or 8 blocks to a friend's house, but I didn't have the energy to walk home. I had to call another friend to come and take me home. Dr. Wade said I've lost a little more weight, another pound or two. That means I now weigh about 117 or 118. I've been eating, trying to get my strength up, so it would be easier going through the trauma of getting my teeth pulled. I've started knitting a beige brown afghan. It gives me something to do other than watch television. There's no fancy pattern to the afghan. I'm not that good of a knitter. My mum taught me to knit a long time ago. I made a huge afghan in sand tones and grey about 3 years ago, but I made the mistake of letting my former lover, Edward, take it. I don't know how long it will take me to make this new one. It depends how much I work on it each day. I'm going to have to wear my glasses to knit it though. I've had them for almost a year. I'm supposed to wear them all the time, but I don't like them. They're tight against my face so the air doesn't get in. That makes them hot. There's nothing like having sweaty eyeballs. A reader has invited me to go on a sailboat ride. We tried to go once, but the weather looked bad. I've never been on a sailboat before. I'm looking forward to it. The reader is concerned about me getting in and out of the sailboat, but I think I can do it. More health tips I've learned. My friend in New York who has AIDS keeps up on hygiene information. He's the one who told me to keep my toothbrush in peroxide to kill the germs. I still do that. Now he's told me that AIDS patients shouldn't wear mustaches. That makes sense. With all of the air, cigarette smoke and dust that travels near your mouth, a mustache has got to be a breeding ground for germs. I'm not going to shave my mustache. My head is so round that my face looks better if it's not bald. My newest health trick is to put a quarter to a half a cup of bleach in my dishwasher. I make sure I rinse the dishes well. Not only does the bleach make the dishes easier to wash, it sanitizes them. I'm not worrying about infecting anyone. I know that the AIDS virus isn't passed on eating utensils. I'm worried about coming into contact with germs. Chapter 27, published on the 8th of October, 1989. I've had another bout with pneumonia. It was about 2 weeks ago. I wasn't really sick, I didn't have the sniffles and I wasn't vomiting, but I felt bad. I was listless, I had no energy, and I had a little pain on my left side, especially when I took a deep breath. About 8 p.m. on Tuesday, I started to feel like a torch. I took my temperature and it was 102. I called some friends who drove me to Decatur Memorial Hospital's emergency room. By the time I got there, my temperature had climbed another couple degrees. It was getting close to where brain damage could occur, and I don't have a lot of grey matter to spare. I was admitted to the hospital, and they did the usual. Took my vitals, collected blood for tests, did x-rays. The x-rays showed I had an early case of pneumonia, and my never-ending sinus infection tormented me again. During my latest hospital stay, doctors just started pumping me full of antibiotics. I guess since we'd caught the pneumonia so early, it didn't take much to knock it out. Actually, the sinus infection bothered me more than the pneumonia. I felt like my head was going to blow up. I stayed in the hospital for 1 week. By then, I think they wanted to get rid of me as much as I wanted to go home. I was so bored I was making a nuisance of myself. My doctor, James Wade III, wanted me to stay a little bit longer, but I promised to monitor my temperature and if there is any increase, admit myself immediately and not wait for it to get out of control. When I go to the hospital now, it's like I'm a celebrity. I'm there so often, everybody knows me. I'm always on the same floor, usually in the same room. I'm on a first name basis with the nurses. Last year, I went to a Halloween party in Springfield with friends. This year, I don't have any big plans. I'll have a jack-o'-lantern just for the pumpkin seeds. I wash them, salt them, and bake them. Of course, this is my first Halloween with no choppers, so I'm not sure how easy they will be to eat. Good friend and journalist Amy Ragsdale is over at Jacob's apartment where she offers the following insight. As Jacob starts to talk about getting dentures, a look of panic crosses his face. "When is my next appointment?" he mumbles as he pulls open his wallet searching for a scrap of paper with the date and time. "Oh no, my appointment was 5 minutes ago," he says, reaching for the phone and dialing quickly. "Can I still make it?" he asks. "Okay, I'll be right there." He grabs his coat and runs for the door. Jacob's dental work began a year ago. He called the Mason County Health Department and was given the name of one dentist in the Decatur area who would treat AIDS patients. However, that dentist would not deal with the public aid system for payment. Jacob has been on welfare since shortly after AIDS was diagnosed. Thinking that dentist was his only option, Jacob began treatment, paying as much as he could in installments. Donations from readers exceeding $1,000 helped Jacob pay for x-rays, extractions, and treatments of infection caused by his rotting teeth. As bills mounted, Jacob searched for and found a dentist willing to take AIDS patients on welfare. Now all his teeth have been pulled, the infection is gone, and his gums are almost completely healed. The next step is dentures. And Jacob goes on to write in his journal, "The dentist looked at me and said, 'It looks like the healing is moving along very well. I face a month's wait while the Illinois Department of Public Aid processes the financing of my dentures. When that's done, the dentist will make impressions for my new teeth. I'll have a series of appointments over 2 months. Boy, am I ready to have choppers. I didn't know it would take this long. I hope it's worth it. Shoot, I hope I'm still alive to use the darn things.' This will be my third winter with AIDS. I don't really dread the cold weather. Keeping warm isn't a problem. If I stay home, my house doesn't get cold. In fact, I'm still using a fan. I'm not a great outdoorsman anymore because I don't have the energy. One problem though, my feet are swelling. It happens whenever my salt intake rises. All I have to do is look at a couple of pieces of bacon and boom! During the summer it doesn't bother me. I go barefoot at home and wear sandals outside. I nearly lost my best friend, my television. I depend on that appliance. It's the centre of my entertainment and companionship. When it breaks down, I go into a fit of fear. It's like being stranded on an island. A few days ago, I turned on my TV. It worked fine for 3 minutes and then went black. I've always had a problem with the volume coming and going. When it goes, I pick up a corner of the television, smack the console on the floor, and the sound comes back. I wasn't so lucky this time. The picture vanished. It was tough to watch my soap operas and just hear the background music. I had to use my imagination about what was going on. I needed a picture, not just sound. Trying to find a repairman, I answered an ad in the newspaper. I figured I could spend up to $100. The guy came over and tinkered with the high voltage section of the television. It cost $100. Now my TV has the best picture it's ever had. I have my best friend back. Chapter 28, published on the 6th of November 1989. Just call me Dear Jacob. I was recently called by an employee at St. Mary's Hospital who wanted me to talk to a man with AIDS-related complex, ARC, known today as HIV. ARC means you're infected with the AIDS virus and are experiencing some symptoms. You don't yet have AIDS, but you'll probably develop it. The man with ARC wanted to talk about suicide. He wanted to know if I had ever contemplated killing myself. I think he asked me because he'd read some of my journal. Writing for the newspaper makes me the most vocal AIDS patient in the area. The man is experiencing some of the same symptoms I did when first diagnosed: night sweats, diarrhea, and thrush. I could tell he was depressed. I levelled with him. I told him, I tried to kill myself a couple of times by taking drugs. Each time, I ended up feeling extra sick for a couple of days. I told him that suicide is a natural thought when you're faced with a terminal illness. Death seems more appealing than letting a disease slowly steal your life. It's easy to feel miserable when you have AIDS. As the disease saps your energy, you suddenly find yourself with lots of extra time on your hands. But you lack the drive to even do the most common things like house cleaning or cooking. Before, you could chase the blues away by going for nice long walks or going shopping. Now, all you can do is sit at home and dwell on how bad you feel. But I told the man with ARC that suicide isn't the answer. I'm convinced that you won't go before your time. Did my advice help? He told me he felt better. He seemed more relaxed. I hope I'll hear from him again. On a visit to Jacob's apartment, friend and journalist Amy Ragsdale offers the following insight. The Kaposi sarcoma has spread from my arms to my chest, Jacob says, pointing to a small spot on the upper left portion of his chest. It's like a small bruise. Kaposi sarcoma is a cancer that is rare among the general population, but common in AIDS patients. Diagnosed in March, Jacob now is spotted with the cancer's telltale purple-brown lesions. My legs are covered now, Jacob says. Small bruises like spots dot the crook of each arm. Running his fingers over a spot on his upper left arm, he says, this is the longest one. Some of them you can't see, but you can feel a knot. Others you can see, but not feel. They itch. In his journal, Jacob goes on to write, I've been around 3 people with colds, but I've managed not to catch them. I must be doing okay. I used to go to the doctor every week, but now I go only every 4 weeks. I'm assuming that's a good sign. Since I haven't had a checkup recently, I don't know my weight or my blood count. Numbers don't mean a whole lot to me anyway. I go by how I feel. I feel fine, although I've discovered I can no longer walk to my friend's house 6 or 8 blocks away. A month or so ago, I was still able to walk there without getting exhausted. I tried it a few days ago and I was wiped out. It took me too long to recharge. That doesn't make for a very good visit. Newsflash from Dental Land. I had the first set of impressions made for my dentures on November the 1st. I'll have a series of appointments and impressions before I'm done. At any rate, I hope to have my new teeth by Christmas. I've been given a bit of advice about dealing with my mother from a reader. When I read the letter, I thought, for not knowing me, this woman has really hit the nail on the head. My mom and I don't talk much anymore. Things between us aren't bad. They're just bland. Here's an excerpt from the letter. Dear Jacob, I've sometimes gotten the feeling while reading your journal that, without trying, you may have hurt your mum. And without trying, she has hurt you. It's awfully hard for all of us to live up to the expectations of our loved ones. But any of us, son or parent, can only do our personal best. It may fall short of what others want of us. Perhaps your mum would have preferred you to be straight. On the other hand, your mom may fall short of what you would want her to be, but what you are is your personal best. No one should ever expect more. Love each other. Give what you can. Take what you have to. Swallow the unrealistic expectations. Enjoy each moment you have together. Sometimes when no one is around, I will read, see or hear something and my eyes begin to swell and I have a good cry. It feels so good, except for the runny nose and red eyes. Anyone who thinks men don't cry is about 3 decades behind the times. I may not go to heaven, but I won't go to hell. Since I wrote that line a few journals back, the letters have poured in. Writers tell me I am guaranteed passage to heaven if I open my heart to Jesus. Look out, heaven! I'll be there in a while. I know some readers think I found God, only because I have AIDS and I'm going to die. That's as good as reason as any, I'd say. I've always had my own private religious feelings, even though you can't call me a Baptist or a Lutheran. The Bible says wherever you worship is a house of God. I worship at home. Occasionally on Sundays I watch a church service on television. The way I figure it, when you're feeling bad, faith is a toehold, like the holes in mountains that climbers use to get a foothold. When you're scaling a mountain and the climbing is easy, you take the toeholds for granted. But when you slip and are in danger of falling, you realise how important those toeholds are. My faith helps me overcome worries and anxieties. It feels nice when people say they're praying for me. Faith is a toehold that makes hanging on a lot more comfortable. I'm going to try and wait until Thanksgiving to put my Christmas decorations up, but I'm not sure I'll be able to. Why am I so antsy? I remember landing in the hospital 2 years ago at Christmas time. Because I had postponed baking cookies and decorating, I didn't get to do either. I figure if I put up the decorations now, while I'm feeling good, I'm certain to have time to enjoy them. My favourite Christmas ornament is a china bell. It's white ceramic, about an inch and a half tall. It came the year I was feeling really bad, a gift from a reader. It was a gift of the heart. Now it gives me hope. Chapter 29, published on the 11th of December, 1989. I feel like I've won a race. On Saturday, I turned 33. Since I have AIDS, there's something special about celebrating my birthday in December. It means I've survived another calendar year. It used to be when my birthday came, I would get depressed, thinking, here I am, another year older. This year, I think, I've made it, another one. If I could celebrate my birthday any way I wanted, how would I do it? Everyone thinks cake and ice cream are the tops, but I'm not a big sweet eater. I'd choose a big, I mean really big, lobster tail and prime rib. Oh. I'm looking forward to Christmas. This year, the holiday brings the promise of making a new friend. It must have been the magic of December the 1st. I got a call from an AIDS patient in Dunn, North Carolina. His aunt, who lives here in Decatur, had sent him copies of my journal. He wrote me a letter and included his phone number. I called. Now he wants us to meet in person. This man shares a home with his mother. When he called me last week, I chatted with his mother too. She said, it's kind of difficult to talk to someone you've never met before. The plan is for the man to come to Decatur for a visit. Then, if all goes well, I will probably return to North Carolina with him for a visit. It sounds like the family would welcome me with open arms. Look out, North Carolina. Jacob may be on the way. I just got a message from the office of my physician, Dr. James Wade III. I will be going to Loyola University in Chicago to see a specialist about my sinus infection. I've been hospitalised twice with this sinus infection. I've had surgery to unplug my head, but it's still not right. The trip is supposed to take one day, not overnight. Other than that, I don't have any more details. Meeting this visitor from North Carolina is like going on a blind date. We may see each other and go, yuck! And he'll hop the next bus back. Or we might really like each other. If I could find a companion who wanted a relationship, I would go for it. AIDS is a very lonely disease. The logical choice of a companion would be someone with AIDS. If I were going to be sexually active, I would want to be with another AIDS patient. I wouldn't want to infect anyone. That's not really an issue anyway. AIDS and medication have taken their toll. My machinery doesn't work like it used to. But who said you have to be sexually active to romance someone? Although I feel great now, I don't take it for granted. When I get sick, it just comes down on me. Nothing creeps up. It just unexpectedly grabs hold. I had a dentist appointment this week and I really thought I was going to get my dentures. I didn't. I was bummed out. During the appointment, the dentist put the finished dentures in my mouth. Then he inserted a filling that moulded them to my gums. I had to clamp down with my jaws while the filling hardened. I go back on December 22nd. Maybe then I will walk out of the dentist's office with my new teeth. Jacob pauses in the middle of writing a journal entry. Excuse me, I've got to do this while it's on my itty-bitty brain. Hi, are you coming by tonight? I forgot what you said. My memory is not as sharp as it used to be. I make appointments and I don't remember them. I see someone on TV that I've watched a million times, but it takes me 5 or 10 minutes to think of who it is. My mental computer doesn't work as fast as it used to. I'm a real space case. I asked Dr. Wade about my memory problems. He said, it's the nature of the beast. He seems to think it's a combination of the AIDS and all the medications I take to prolong my life and fight infections. I try to get things done as quickly as possible so I don't have a chance to forget. I have to come up with a system to help me remember. I've been back in touch with a Decatur AIDS patient who talked to me about suicide. He was depressed and thinking about ending his life. I was introduced to him several weeks ago by an employee of St. Mary's Hospital. For a while, I didn't hear back from him and I was worried. Now we've talked several times. He seems to be doing quite well. I invited him to help me trim my Christmas tree. Even though I'm leaving town for a while, I've been decorating my apartment for Christmas. If I'm not here, at least my fish will enjoy the Christmas tree. Then, when I get home, I'll stay busy putting everything away. Chapter 30, published on the 16th of January, 1990. Hooray! At last, I've got teeth! They arrived 2 weeks ago during the deep freeze. The dentist's office closed during the cold snap because no one showed up for appointments. I was ready to get my teeth, but Old Man Winter made me wait a little longer. I got used to not having any teeth. It's kind of like new shoes. In honour of my new teeth, my friend Grandma got me the basics for Christmas. Polydent, a denture brush, Aurafix, Fix-A-Dent, and cushion grips. Then, to celebrate, Madeline Beck, a switchboard operator at the Herald and Review, took me out to dinner. She's my buddy since I talk to her about every time I call the newspaper. Occasionally, we strike up conversation while I'm on hold. We went to Red Lobster, where I had had, for the first time, a recently live lobster. Oh, Christmas was good to me. Besides my denture paraphernalia, I got a stereo mixer and new underwear. Just think, now I can dance in my skivvies. I made it up to Chicago to see a nurse specialist at Loyola University Medical Center. I hoped he could do something to ease the pain of my chronic sinus problems. It was a bust. Ridiculous. I took the bus to Chicago, then spent 4 hours sitting in the bus station, killing time until my appointment. Then I took a cab to the hospital and spent an hour and a half sitting in the doctor's waiting room. Finally, they called me in. I carried my x-rays from my physician, Dr. James Wade III. The doctor looked at the x-rays. He said he felt my doctors here, Drs. Wade and Stephen Chadwick, would be able to do any necessary surgery. So, with a quick thank you, my 10-minute visit ended. I don't think Dr. Wade was pleased with the trip's outcome. After all, there had been painstaking planning done to get me up to Chicago. As for me, I'd just like to get my nose fixed. I can't very easily breathe out of my left nostril. My friend from North Carolina hasn't been here to visit yet, and I haven't been there. With the holidays, I guess it was difficult for him to make the arrangements. Now, he's saying he'll try to come in February. He sent me a picture. He's cute. Of course, I can't remember where I've put the photo. AIDS is taking a toll on my memory. We don't talk as often as we did, though. I got tired of running up my phone bill. I'd write to him, but naturally I've misplaced his address. I guess he'll have to make the next move, if he's still interested. If it happens, if we get to meet, great. If not, I'll just tune into another channel. I've been considering quitting smoking, again. I went a couple of days without any cigarettes, but I reconsidered and bought a pack. Friend and journalist Emmy Ragsdale, on a visit to Jacob's apartment, shares the following insight. Jacob sits on the floor between his couch and his cluttered coffee table. As he talks, he peers over the mishmash of items that tell the story of his life. Everything is within reach. Ashtrays littered with cigarette butts, a can of beer, pens, envelopes, the telephone. Today, there's something new, a can of Polydent for the new dentures. And, besides it, sits a bottle of Retrovir. Retrovir is the brand name of AZT, a life-prolonging drug. In his journal entry, Jacob goes on to write, I take 2 AZT pills 3 times a day, at noon, at 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. Sometimes I forget, but I guess that's a common problem with anyone who takes a lot of drugs. It makes me feel a little sluggish, but I'd say the medicine is still doing its trick. I don't think I'd still be here if I didn't take it. I'll probably take AZT forever, as long as it doesn't do in my liver or pancreas. Those are the possible side effects. I've been feeling okay. I haven't been in the hospital for what seems like forever. I don't know how I've been so lucky. And I think I've been putting on weight. I don't have a scale, but I know how my clothes used to fit and how they fit now. Grandma got me a new pair of suspenders, but right now I don't need them. I think I'll do good in the 1990s. I'm going to call it the hopeful decade. In the next episode, Dave faces the harrowing reality of night sweats, undergoes radiation therapy for the Kaposi sarcoma, and Dave finds himself back in hospital with pneumonia. Amidst this turmoil, there is a moment of joy when he relocates from his small bedsit apartment to a more spacious 2-bedroom house. Unfortunately, the burden of his illness becomes overwhelming, culminating in a hospital admission where Dave, and those around him, are faced with the gravity of his situation, ultimately saying goodbye as he prepares for the final chapter of his diary. You can check out and read all the newspaper articles mentioned in this episode, along with extra snippets of information, on the Extra Tea blog. You can find the link in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to like, share and subscribe. Until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at The Lost Boys of Soho.